Kitchen Rudimental, a series here on Blueprint for Living in which Annie Smithers will investigate the very basics of kitchen craft. Get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Annie Smithers, as I live and breathe.
Here I am.
We are in a kitchen, all the better to have this conversation, which will be about salt.
All the better that the fact that the sun is shining and perhaps winter is leaving us.
Well, yes, there is that possibility. It's still, the jury's still out.
Well, yes, and salt makes me think of the seaside.
Okay, all right, there's the link. Is there a more rudimental thing? When we think about food, what are the rudiments? There's heat.
Yes.
There's fat.
Yes.
There's sweetness.
Yes.
There's sourness.
Yeah.
And there's salt.
Salt.
Is that about all of them?
I think that's about, and there's umami.
That.
Yeah, that, yes. that thing. that thing. So, yeah, salt, I think that salt is, you know, one of the, I think it's possibly my favourite ingredient.
Wow.
Because it's just so, you know, it has so many faces and so many things that it does.
Describe those aspects of its character to me.
Well, the first one is that you season with salt to bring out the flavour in things. So you add salt to the water when you boil pasta, or salt to mashed potatoes to bring out, you know.
How does that work? Why do things taste better with a bit of salt around them?
It will probably have to do with the taste buds on your tongue sending messages to that part of your brain that registers flavour in an instant. And so the salt receptors, you know, I think they're probably faster than some of the others.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Makes it taste better.
It does make it taste better. It does seem to bring out the flavours. But it's like analysing any of the flavours, you know, whether they're sour or salty or sweet. You know, why do they have this effect on us? Why do they, you know, why do sometimes we crave salt over sugar? Or some people only crave salt and are not sweet tooths and never crave sugar. And some people who crave sugar never crave salt. So it must be, there has to be some sort of big relationship between how your tongue works and your personal brain. It's not the same for everybody, because a lot of people, yeah, so seasoning food is a very personal choice.
And people will say too, who are anxious perhaps about too much salt,
yes,
that they can train themselves to have the same sense of excitement and appreciation with food.
Absolutely.
With less, but it takes time to accustom.
It's like dropping sugar out of your coffee.
Mm.
You know, you slowly but surely you can really enjoy, and you start to really enjoy coffee without sugar if you've been a habitual, you know, sugar adderer.
But we're wired for saltiness. You know, although the running over the savannah being pursued by tigers, we need those electrolytes.
We need those
probably.
Electrolytes and the salts. And of course, if you drink too much water, so if you drink more than 3 to 4 litres of water a day, is you start to interrupt the salt balance in your body, and you can actually have terrible mental effects on your brain. So it's a finely balanced part of who we are, you know, how much water we're made up of, how much salt is in the sort of equilibrium of that, you know, state. And salt is one of those things that, you know, is part of us and part of the natural world.
There's all sorts of different kinds, of course, especially in the cooking context.
There's so many different kinds of salt now, isn't there?
So what do you keep in your kitchen?
I have one salt and one salt alone in my kitchen these days, and that is a flaked salt. An inland Victorian flake salt. I enjoy it as a salt because it's delicious. You can actually taste it and put it on your tongue, and it's not sort of vile. But I buy it in 15-kilo boxes.
How did you come upon that? What was your process there?
Of that one?
Just
It came across my desk, so to say, some years ago. And I thought,
nice.
I like that one. And because I buy it in these big boxes, I haven't bought 150 kilos of salt at a time. And I've just, that's the salt I have in the kitchen. So a lot of people I grew up with iodized salt, Saxa salt. Mm-hmm. I think as a lot of Australians did, which I refer to, I don't know what, even why I refer to it, as flossy salt, which is just your general cheap salt.
Like what you're looking at here in this little container.
Yeah, you know, which is the stuff that you season water with that you liberally toss about. And then, you know, you've got the more expensive salts. And I think, you know, we used to import a lot of Maldon sea salt, which was our first, I think, Australia's first introduction to fancy salt.
And it's a particular crystal shape with that, isn't it?
It's a beautiful shape, and it's a beautiful crunch in your mouth. It adds a textural as well as flavour.
Because once you're starting to get into the shape of your salt crystal,
you're bordering on obsessive.
Yes.
Well, I beg to differ. So, you know, we have rock salt, which is much coarser. And I can remember in the 70s my mother buying the wrong salt for the salt grinder, and it was too coarse to go through the grinder. So we have the pink salts now.
Yes.
So we have the beautiful pink salt from the Victorian lakes, and then the Himalayan version that seems to be about a lot. And of course, there is, I think one of my personal favourites is there's the Gros Gris, which is the grey salt from France, which is bakers seem to prefer. It's a very good bread salt.
So you can have your particular favourites.
Yes.
And that's fine. But for all intents and purposes, are all these salts basically doing the same thing?
Well, they're basically doing the same thing, yes. If you drill right down, they do have different flavours.
Okay.
And because of their shape, they do behave differently. So salt is something that you need to be really careful with measurements. So if something says a teaspoon of salt, a teaspoon of flossy salt or just standard iodized salt is very different to a teaspoon of flake salt, because you've got all that empty space with all those angles and edges. And so those two things are not the same.
And most recipes commonly accessed will be, your teaspoon will be flossy salt, I'm assuming.
I would presume so. Mm. But I think that sort of weight is an important thing, particularly with baking and things like bread.
And taste in more general cooking, of course.
Yeah.
In your process with most things, are you continual sort of pinch of salt kind of person through a process as you add things, maybe a little bit of salt with that, or is it a final sort of seasoning? What's your...
I am a person that seasons to begin with. So if I'm doing a braise of something or a roast of something, I will use seasoning to start with, and then I will check it at the end and correct it if I feel necessary. But you can never take it away. If there's too much, there's too much.
Salt and chilli.
Salt and chilli. Salt and chilli, yep. Once it's done, it's done.
Because some people will say, as you do your onions, a sprinkle of salt with that, for example.
I think generally I season things as they're cooking, because I think it helps absorb that flavor, absorb the salt. Whereas if you just add it at the end, it doesn't have the same chance to enhance the flavor. And that's in those sort of cooking circumstances, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for it to enhance the natural flavors and bring out the.
If it is a critical part of your flavor mix in your food.
Yeah.
And your whole process of cooking is about taking time to let those things come out and combine, then you clearly want that there through that process.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can't take it away.
Can't take it away.
But we need to add it in.
Yeah.
So I guess you've got to develop
a feel for it and a feel for the salt that you use. And when to go back to the beginning of when you said, what salt do you use? I think that's probably why I've settled on one salt, because I can...
Right, predictable quantity about
I can... I know how much to add for various things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's alarming on a commercial scale how much salt you will put into something. So if I make sort of mashed potato for 30, 40 people for the day, is it's actually quite a hand, you know, by the time you go, you know, a big, you know, toss, then another toss, then you look at it and you think, gosh, that's a lot of salt, and then you mix it all in, you taste it, and oh, it needs some nice. More. It needs a bit more, toss a bit more in.
And as a chef in a commercial sense too, when you're, you know, peeking out from the kitchen at people at their tables and they're grinding away, how does that make you feel?
Oh, look, there will always be people who will season their food before they actually taste it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's fine. That's who they are and what they like. There, you know, you sometimes get requests for people to have low salt or no salt. But generally those that sort of toss it on with gay abandon, they know what they like. And they know that I won't put enough on it for their taste buds. And I'm just happy that they're happy.
So give me a rule of thumb, just as a last point, sort of a salt credo from Annie Smithers.
Oh, find a salt that you like and work out how much of it you like to add to your food. I think it's a very personal thing.
And free yourself from the bonds of flossy salt.
Free yourself from the bonds of old floss. But yes, it is the salt market is quite a landscape these days.
Annie, thank you. That's our salt primer. And next time we're going to look at, and this is a thing close to the heart of colonial Australians.
Oh, yes.
Salt as a preserving agent.
Salt as the preserver.
Salt pork.
Yep.
In barrels.
On the ships.
Full of weevils. Thank you.
It's a pleasure on that note. I said, shake, run and roll.